Welcome to another episode of Million Dollar Stories, where we get to interview authors from all over the world. You know, I love talking to authors because they have the courage to take their thoughts, put it down on a piece of paper, and share that wisdom with the many, ultimately changing the world in the process, potentially, right? So if you're looking to write a book out there, check out Dream Starters Publishing. We can help you out with wherever you're at in the process. And if you have a book that's already done, check out Book Marketing CRM. You can put your book on autopilot to generate leads so you can grow that business and get your message out there. The book that we're talking about today is perfect for you out there if you're an entrepreneur looking to start or grow a business. Why is that? Because this book is all about creating more value, not only for your team, but for your customers. And once you understand value and maybe keeping things simple every step of the way, you can have a competitive advantage. The book that we're talking about is called Better, Simpler Strategy, A Value-Based Guide to Exceptional Performance. We have the author today, Felix Oberholzer G, with us. Thanks so much for being here, sir.
It's great to be with you, Mike. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start off with the genesis of this book. What made you want to write it? And if you can give a quick little synopsis on your background, who are you? Where do you come from? And what do you do?
Yes. So the idea for the book really comes out of teaching at Harvard Business School, mostly in mid-career executive programs. And one of the things that always surprised me a little bit, like say if accountants meet, we don't really have to have a big conversation about what's accounting all about and why do we do it. If marketers meet, there's not a big conversation. Why do we have marketing? If strategists meet, it's a little less clear. What is strategy good for? How does it do? What's the link between strategic decisions and the financial success of the company that I want to build or the company that I'm in already? All of those questions are hairy questions, even for seasoned executives. And so the idea of the book is really to simplify what it means to be a strategic thinker in an organization, or if you're thinking about starting a business, if you're thinking about building something, how do you know what's likely going to work? How do you know the most promising direction in which you want to take your idea?
Excellent. Now, in the beginning of your book, you talk about Renew Blue, and I think it has something to do with Best Buy. So can you give a quick little background on that? Because I found that pretty fascinating.
Yeah. So you might remember going back 10, 12 years or so, we all thought that Best Buy is going to go out of business.
Yes.
And it was pretty obvious why, you know, how on earth you compete against Amazon. You have almost 1,000 stores. That's very expensive to do. And so basically we're just, you know, Circuit City had gone out of business. And so we're waiting. When will the next shoe drop? And then they get a new CEO, and the new CEO has basically two important ideas. One idea is because they have 1,000 stores, they don't build big distribution centers in e-commerce. They start shipping from each of these stores, beating Amazon in shipping times. And then the second idea is he goes to Microsoft and Samsung and all these tech companies, and he said, you can go down the Apple route and you can build beautiful stores, millions and millions of dollars in expense, obviously, or you can be at a Best Buy selling right where people look for electronic products. And these two ideas, they go from losing $1.5 billion a quarter to a return on invested capital of 25%. And one of the things that is I see over and over and over again, most companies do way too many things. Too many projects, too many ideas, too many directions to chase. And when you look at it, what's really successful, what really makes performance? It's a surprisingly small number of initiatives. And then, of course, the bigger question is, like, how would you recognize which ones to pursue and which ones not to pursue? And this is really where the framework in the book comes in. There's two ideas. One is projects, initiatives, ventures are likely to be successful if they do one of two things. They increase the willingness to pay of customers, or they decrease the willingness to sell of employees. So increasing willingness to pay of customers, obviously, we think about all the time, this idea of customer centricity. You discover something that customers want that they cannot currently have, or you discover a version of what they would want to have that is really promising. Willingness to sell, interestingly, we talk about less so, but it's equally important. And that is the value proposition of the business to employees. Why should I work for your business and not for some competitor? Willingness to sell is a metric that captures my being attracted to your business because, say, you are incredibly inclusive or you give me great career opportunities and so on and so on. Everybody understands and knows competing on price for customers is a terrible idea.
Yes.
But at the same time, almost everyone I know competes on compensation for talent. And this is a difference in thinking about these two types of competition that is not obvious where it comes from. And the book helps you understand how you could get out of this box, creating both value for customers and then value for employees at one and the same time.
And so I'm looking at your book here. And guys, if you pick up his book, Better, Simpler Strategy, you'll be able to see how he does it. Willingness to pay as compared to willingness to sell. And yet the value is created in the middle. Can you just explain that maybe in layman's terms for me for our audience? Because I think I grasp it, but just so I have it and I understand it. Can you explain it?
Good. Yes. Happy to do so. So the figure that you just described is called a value stick. And it's literally just a line. At the top sits willingness to pay. So that's the maximum a customer would ever pay for a product or a service. So I raise my price, I raise my price, I raise my price. At some point in time, the customer is going to say, oh, now too much.
Yep.
I'm not going to buy. Think of it as a separation point between the customer and the company. And then the same idea for employees at the bottom of the value stick, where we have their willingness to sell. So I pay you a little less, I pay you a little less, I pay you a little less. And at some point you're going to say, oh, now not enough compensation. I'm going elsewhere, or I don't know, I'm going to the beach, or I'm stop working altogether. It's just not financially lucrative.
And so real quick, just to jump in there, you're talking about, look at it from a business owner. You need to have the value stick in regards to people who are going to be your customers and your tribe members, your team members, right? So willingness to sell is in reference to your sales force, your team. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Everyone who works for your organization, every supplier who does something for your company or for the startup that you plan, they all have a value proposition that makes them attracted to your business. And that value proposition, a good measure of that is this willingness to sell. How, if you love your job, you might not get the very best compensation in the world, and you're still better off sticking with your job. Why? Because you have low willingness to sell, because there's many other forces that attract you to that kind of work. That's a way to compete very effectively in the market for talent.
Beautiful. And the way I'm able to equate this graph to my business is we usually start with, what are my competitors offering? All right. So what are they selling it for? How can we beat them? Let's beat them in price, but also with quality, with customer service. So we're gauging it off of that. Now, in my first business that succeeded, publishing, I started very low just to ensure sales. And then as time went on and I grew my team, we just kept expanding. And then you'll start to realize there are limits. And I guess maybe this is a trial and error period. So would you say that on average, most people will do both pathways that I did, where we're kind of going off of what the market's doing. And then there's also people who are, hey, we just need sales. Let's get it off the ground. And then we'll figure out our willingness to pay ceiling and our willingness to sell floor as we proceed on this pathway. So is that usually the path that most businesses take, or one of those two?
So I think it's a good description of what typically happens, but you and I also know that the survival rate of new ventures of startups is not particularly big. And one of the main problems is that I start out with a value proposition that is largely undifferentiated. Oh, this is a really great idea. I saw a company that does XYZ. Oh, here's a piece of technology that allows me to do something really interesting. And then before you know it, you have 15 companies that have essentially the same value stick. Now, think about what that means for customers. If I see the same value proposition, the same willingness to pay across multiple companies, how would I choose? Well, of course, I choose based on whoever has the lowest price. That creates a lot of price compression. So, in your experience, customers are really price sensitive. But that's not because customers are truly price sensitive. That's because you make them choose based on this one criterion, price, because willingness to pay is the same. And then the same at the bottom of the value stick for employees. if your job is like everybody else, how do I choose? Of course, I choose based on who pays the most significant compensation. And so both of these forces, they compress your margins. And then, not surprisingly, many startups, many businesses cannot survive. If you do it the other way around, if you start out by, I want a business that has differentiated willingness to pay, a value proposition that I cannot find in the market today, and I want a differentiated value proposition for employees, then you actually get financial flexibility. You can charge premium prices. You don't have to pay compensation at the top of the scale. And the survival chances of your venture, of your startup, are going to increase dramatically. Maybe I give you a practical example of an experiment.
Yes.
You probably know, being in retail, working in retail in the US is quite stressful. It's quite difficult because you never really know, when am I going to work? When will I not work? Because we schedule people for shifts. And then sometimes, you know, the truck doesn't come in, so there's no jeans, and we don't need people who restock the shelves, and we cancel these shifts. As a result, for the average person in retail, their weekly compensation fluctuates by about 40%. It's very hard to make plans. You never really know what your income is going to be. So what's the solution? So you use a very simple app that is essentially, imagine like a marketplace for shifts. So my daughter's ill, I can't be at work. I use the app to make my shift available. And someone else who, I don't know, you have to rent to pay and you want to work a little more, you want higher income, they take my shift. Within weeks, you see thousands of shifts traded. And then three things happen. Fluctuation at that business goes way down. Why? You lowered willingness to sell. You created a better job. People are happy to stick around. Same store sales go up by 12%. Why? Well, turns out if people really want to be at work when they're at work, they're doing a better job selling. And then my favorite statistic, parents with young kids, they report sleeping much better at night. Why? Well, life is a little less stressful. So that's the intuition. Start with value creation. When I have many students, as you can probably imagine, who want to create a business, and usually they come in to office hours, and the first thing they want to talk about is how they make money. That's exactly the wrong way around to do it. Don't start with the business model. Don't start with thinking about how you're going to make money. If you have truly a differentiated value proposition, am I worried about you finding a business model to survive and make money and get rich? No, I'm not worried at all. If you have nothing to offer because your value proposition is like everybody else's, yeah, there's no version of the universe in which you'll be successful.
Mm, yeah. And I think in chapter 3 of your book, you talk about think value, not profit. So profit should be secondary or maybe even down the line. It's all about the value, this problem that you solve first.
Yes.
And maybe this is the way I look at it, and it makes sense that profit always is the value add to the marketplace. Case in point, let's just say you take a widget that's $5 and you take another widget that's $5 and you combine the two and you put the two together and you save the potential person who wants to buy it time, energy, and frustration. Well, you might be able to take those two widgets and now the cost was $10, but you sell it for $12. The value that you offer to the world is convenience, speed, simplicity. And so that's $2 to you, right? So you're thinking of how can I solve the problem for the person? And the problem that I solve and I can make it as easy as possible on these individuals, that's the value. Therefore, that's the profit. Am I looking at it in your terms or is there another way that we could reframe that?
No, that's exactly right. So you start with what is the customer problem that I'm going to solve? What is the point of attraction for people who want to work in my business? Sometimes I see companies when they want to be more successful, when they want to reorient their strategy, they start with the financials. And that's a little bit like driving the car and focusing on the rear view mirror. A, it's financials, it's about the past. And also, you don't see the most important part, namely the value created for customers and the value created for employees. So you want to start with the value proposition and then think of profit as a consequence. If you do it right, profitable. You don't really have to worry about that. That is just a natural outcome from having a differentiated value proposition. All of a sudden, oh my God, it's amazing. We created a business that's financially successful. Why, where does the financial success come from? That's just the result of your having created value in the first place.
Great point. I don't think I've ever heard that, sir, that profit should be looked at as a consequence, right? I mean,
That's
how
right.
many people put it in those terms? That's great.
Yes. I mean, I see so much, like sometimes it's really interesting to me how people pour, they study their profit and loss statements and think, oh, how could we, massage the margin here? How could we maybe do a little more price differentiation and so on and so on? So you fo because what you see in your financials is essentially prices and costs, like revenue and cost. And so it's very natural to think about how could we optimize this? So let me give you an example. Imagine a plane. Every seat taken, everybody will have paid a different price, right? Airlines, amazing at doing price differentiation. I have just a tiny hint that you have might have higher willingness to pay. You see higher prices, and I charge you a premium for that flight. How much better is the flight as a result of all of these efforts? Not one bit. It's exactly the same flight with exactly the same kind of problem. As a result, look at airline profitability. Nothing to show for it. Why? Because you didn't create anything. You stared at revenue. You thought, how could we grow revenue? Don't ask, how can we grow revenue? Ask, how could we add more value to the customer? You're thinking, how could we lower cost? Don't think about lowering cost. How could you create better jobs? If you follow that, you lean back and you see the money roll in. Why? Oh, because I created value. Profit is a consequence.
Yeah, you're making me rethink something that we're offering to our clients, that it's a seamless and very simple process of getting a CRM under their belt and launched. But there is no difference between maybe another CRM that's out there in their mind at that point. So I really need to differentiate ourselves with a value add right up front, guaranteeing that there's going to be a different experience. And I don't know if I'm doing that properly just yet. So once again, yes, it's a gateway, it's a funnel into our business, but some things we're running into, a struggle is really showcasing how we're different in the beginning. We are as they progress with us and to see the possibilities, but in the very beginning, you need to show your value first, right?
Yes,
And you do that, and maybe you can give us a few pointers on maybe how we can do that, but you really accentuate some type of deliverable or some type of transformation that they will have once they experience that product or service, or potentially what they're going to get in exchange right away. Like, there's got to be speed, there's got to be simplicity, there's got to be a return on investment within an X amount of time of purchasing that product or service. So is there anything that you can tell us that, when it comes to maybe human psychology, what they're looking for, and maybe ways that we can increase that value prior to them actually handing us their money?
Yes, yeah. So there's two things that I really love about the example that you just gave. The first is sometimes this is an education task, right? It's not, there's a reason why you are the company and you provide the service and I'm the customer and I may not be an expert at your service. This is exactly why I buy it from you in the first place. So the education piece is sometimes that you need to tell the customer, you need to explain to the customer why I should have a higher willingness to pay for your product, say, as opposed to someone else's product. So that's an important function of marketing that you build understanding on the customer's part of what the product does and why I should have higher willingness to pay for your product relative to someone else's. In the book, about the last third of the book is about implementation. Thinking about willingness to pay and willingness to sell, I think is really powerful. Like every meeting I'm in, like if I hear an idea, if I hear a suggestion, my mind goes so fast to, does it change willingness to pay? Does it change willingness to sell? If the answer is no, or we're not so sure, end of conversation, nothing good can come of it. But it's also not totally clear, like, what are we doing Monday morning? Like, how do we operationalize these things? And so the last third of the book is about how to go from these ideas to then actually, what do we do Monday morning? And One of the tools that I offer is something called a value map. And when you create a value map, you're thinking about when the customer chooses, say, between these two CRM products, how would the customer make that choice? And all of the criteria that go into that choice, these are called value drivers. And so what you do on a piece of paper, you list all the value drivers and you list them from most important to least important. And then you start thinking about on all of these value drivers. So how convenient, how difficult is the login, like all the aspects that I might care about, how good am I relative to the competition? And then really beautiful, what you see on that one value map is where are you in an advantageous position? Where have you fallen behind? And of course, your strategy is then essentially to double down on the kinds of things where you have an advantage to begin with. This is an important insight. Many people have this intuition that, oh my God, it's really hard to compete with this other company because they're doing something really, really well and we need to catch up. Well, if you catch up, two things happen. You raise willingness to pay. You are really a better business, but also you become more similar. So price becomes more important and there's margin pressures. So don't invest in the kinds of things where you've fallen behind. Double down on your advantages that create a bigger difference between you and the competing product. And you see this literally on these value maps. If you look at one of them, I don't know if you had a chance to look at them, where it tells you, oh, here are the three things you should invest in because A, customers care about it. It lifts towards the top of the value map. And then if I do this successfully, all of a sudden, my business is seen as being differentiated in ways that it wasn't seen before.
Mm. Yeah. When you're talking about value drivers, I'm just thinking of a few that are really, really relevant to me as a consumer. But to get that value driver list accurate, do you believe one of the best ways is to kind of do a poll with your best clients or maybe clients that left you even? Like, what were you looking for? What could we have done better? The value drivers, are they based off of intuition? The experience that you have within that industry of what's important? Or is it really as simple as asking the people around you of what you're really seeking, and therefore we can just do a better job at providing it?
Yes, I think it can be many things. I most companies that use these value maps successfully, it's a bit of a journey. Maybe you start with intuition. Maybe you have a conversation with your sales force because salespeople often have insight in why customers chose your product or didn't choose your product. But ultimately, you're exactly right. If you do it more formally, you send out the survey and you're asking two things, really. The first is, what are the criteria that you're using to make these choices? So say I'm choosing between two banks. Like, how would I choose? Oh, probably how many ATMs do you have? How convenient is the service? Is your app a great app? And so on and so on. All of these criteria. And then the second thing is you want to know what is really important and what is not important. One method I often use when I work with companies is that I give customers 100 points. And I say, allocate the 100 points against all of these value drivers. Now I'm forcing you to make a trade-off, because if you just ask me, what do you want as a customer? Of course, what I'm telling you is I want everything and I want it for free. That's not exactly useful if you're trying to decide what to do and what not to do. And so finding a way to see the relevant trade-offs so that you get the list of value drivers ordered from most important to least important, that's really critical. That's what really matters. And then that basically your strategy falls out of this value map. You really see what to do. So point number one is convenience.
Yeah.
And I already have a slight advantage in convenience, but I could really double down on this. And now the heart of strategy becomes creativity and imagination. You and I will sit down and we'll be thinking about all the ways in which we could double down on convenience. And that is also, in my experience at least, that is what makes strategy fun and interesting. And it's not a number crunching exercise. It's about a way to figure out how can we deliver even more value to the customers, and then the same exercise for employees as well.
So I think Amazon tapped into something that I think a lot of people are taking and running with it in their business. Individuals will always pay for speed and convenience, always, right? And the fact that Amazon is working so hard to make it as convenient as possible to log in, to buy, and to have it just delivered the next day or 2 days is just incredible, right? They will say it's going to take 3 days, but it arrives in 2 days. And maybe that's where they over deliver and under promise, another aspect of value. So
yes,
speed, convenience, and surprise. I think those are the three that we try to implement in every aspect of business, because, or yep, in our business. Yep. So would you say that maybe I'm missing out on one or two other things? I mean, obviously speed, convenience, and the ability to surprise them, that it maybe we said it took it would take 30 days, but it actually came in at day 27. Wow, yeah, these people really stick to their word and actually over-deliver. Any other suggestions?
Yes. So I think that's a great way of thinking about it. And you want to think about always, like, when you tell me an idea, I can't actually tell you, is it a great idea or is it not a great idea before I know what the competition does. So let's go back to your Amazon example. So Amazon excels at speed and convenience. Now imagine your Temu, the Chinese e-commerce organization. They come into the US and they're thinking about, like, how on earth should we compete with Amazon? Should we try to outdo them and do even faster delivery than they do? No. Temu says, okay, so we're going to say you order from us, you have to wait 2 weeks. It's going to take anywhere from 10 days to 2 weeks or so. But what we do in exchange, we give you even broader choices than Amazon. And we give you the most incredible prices you have ever seen. And we do quality inspection in a way that is really promising because we know the Chinese landscape like no one else. And before you know it, Amazon is doing really well. Everyone who needs things tomorrow, Amazon is the business. And then Temu explodes in popularity. Why? Because there's many things where I don't really care about the speed. And so I'm very happy to shop at their site. So it's all about these differences. It's about the value proposition that you look at what's already out there. And then you and I are going to decide the last thing we want to do is compete with someone who's already done the set of things. We're going to do it differently. We're going to change that factors that go into willingness to pay. And so when you look at Temu and Amazon customers, the top of their value map looks very different. And as a result, they split the customers. They don't really compete for the customer segment. Both companies can be really profitable.
Got it. And I've realized that wherever there's a problem, usually that gives you such an opportunity to be the solution, right? Anytime you experience a hiccup with another business, you could say, wow, that was painful. I guarantee other people were running into the exact same amount of pain. Let me be the solution for that. So what I'm noticing is that there's a lot of chaos out there and there's a lot of transformation with AI and how business is being done. In my opinion, this is starting to create cracks in businesses and you can start to maybe fill those gaps. And so it's a great time to, if you can revamp your business to some degree, and then you can also reposition yourself or pivot, this is a great time to capitalize on the cracks that are happening all around us. Do you agree?
Yeah. Yeah. And what you capture beautifully is, you know, there is so much excitement about AI and technology and all of these things in general, but that's not how we start. I don't care one bit about technology. I start with, what is it that the customer wants? It's convenience. And if AI has an answer to making things even more convenient, AI is going to be super, super important. If AI does things that don't really speak to convenience, I couldn't care less. So I'd give you two examples. Like, I have never heard anyone who was able to explain to me why I should care about the metaverse. Like, my willingness to pay just does not depend on anything that
I'm with
gets
you.
Like,
yeah.
I go to decentralized, like, what am I doing here? Like, it's just not meaningful. If you're a criminal, cryptocurrency seems like a really good idea. But for the rest of humanity, why on earth is anyone talking about cryptocurrency? It is not a meaningful driver of willingness to pay and willingness to sell. And so Just like we don't start with financials, never, ever, ever start with technology. It changes like the half hour we spoke with one another. There's like 18 ideas in technology. Which ones should I pay attention to? I can't really figure it out unless I think through what is driving the willingness to pay of my customers, what is driving the willingness to sell of my employees. If this new technology allows half of my people to work from home, oh my God, this technology is so relevant. It drives down willingness to sell because everybody understands now I'm not going to be stuck in traffic. That is amazing, super relevant. But so many other pieces of technology are just, yeah, engineers can do pretty amazing things. Do I care? No, I don't really care one bit because it's not driving value for anyone in my business.
Yeah, and I think that maybe some of the mistakes that entrepreneurs make is that they believe others really care about their business as much as they do. And I will be honest, I sometimes fall into that trap, like, oh man, I think they love every aspect of this, right? Because you hear such good testimonials and you think that they love your business as much as you do sometimes. But I was on a call yesterday and she was an expert in sales and she said, hey, you got the CRM, you have this book business. It might be amazing, but I will tell you, nobody cares, right? They only care about the transformation that happens from using your product. So do
That's
not
exactly
lean
right.
in on you talking about all the benefits unless it lands and resonates with the person. It's clear and it's simple, right?
Yes.
And it makes sense to these people to invest with you because they could see it in their mind that their life is going to be absolutely better without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah.
And when you hear that, I'm like, oh my God, it kind of hurts, but it's like so right that
yes, yeah.
what we need to do more than anything is to show instantly that their life is going to be better if they choose us. And you have to show the value with videos, with everything. Technology, like you said, you get caught up in it, like to talk about the technology. Nobody cares unless it leads to a better life. So that's probably a great takeaway from this book. Am I right?
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly right. So everything is outside in. Don't start with your own financials. Don't start with your own ideas. Start with what is it that employees and customers are looking for? How can you make their life better in some fashion by raising their willingness to pay, lowering willingness to sell? And then that's the foundation of a real business. And then we're asking, are we doing it differently from the competition? If the answer is yes, we have a real business. If the answer is no, we don't really have much.
Excellent. So outside of your own book, this is a question we ask every one of our guests. Outside of your own book, is there one that you recommend when it comes to either creating more value or just entrepreneurship in general, or anything that made you fall in love with this pathway that you're on?
The one book that I would recommend, it's an older book now, but it's probably the most beautifully written business book that at least I have ever read, is a book called Different. And the idea is exactly the idea that, you know, the title suggests. It's by a colleague of mine, Young Mi Moon, and she talks about how would you discover relevant differences? We now just talked about, oh, you've got to look at the customer, but how does that actually work? And it's this idea of escaping the competitive herd. And she has like amazing examples, a good way of thinking about where differences come from, because you already know, unless we have these differences, everything you do might be okay, might be like you're doing it really well, but it just won't have any financial impact because you're like everybody else. So Different, I think, is a book that I would warmly, warmly recommend.
And so in regards to the story about Best Buy and how they transformed a little bit, right? They focused on maybe where Amazon was not doing so well, or maybe that they were able to grant other companies real estate in their locations, ultimately giving them there was a value add to the businesses, not just for the consumers. Is there anything else that you would say in regards to, you know, because the landscape of business is always changing, do you think that every business needs to have a very high degree of being able to pivot and change on a dime to accentuate maybe certain value offers, value drivers? And so I think some businesses will be dinosaurs unless they do this. So being able to kind of be nimble so they can skip around some of the rocks that other businesses are hitting. I think that versatility is becoming more and more important as we go into this world of technology. So do you agree with that? Is that one thing that you would leave us with, is that make sure that your eyes are open, because some things are changing and this is the time for you to maybe dive into it and really exploit some of the problems that are out there. And you can only do that if you're versatile.
Yeah. So I would say, as you think about these value drivers, there's a bit of an art in describing what they really are. But if you have a good description, that's like an incredible, incredible advantage. So if you describe the value drivers very narrowly, so say I offer you a mobile application and the login works via fingerprint, and then this is the screen. So if I have a very detailed description of what the product is today and how it delivers value, that leads me into frenetic change, like constantly, because the technological possibilities, like, how do we log in tomorrow? Will we type? Will we just, is it all speech to text and so on and so on? Like, those things actually change almost week by week by week. And you're creating, if that's how you build your organization, you're creating this rat race where it feels like, oh my God, we're always behind. We're always having to do like a million things.
Yes.
If you specify the value drivers more generally, so say what customers really want is peace of mind. What customers really want is convenience. Now, how do I do peace of mind tomorrow? Obviously, that's different from the way I've done it before, but it's the same thing. Like, we're still thinking about peace of mind. We're still thinking about convenience. And so I would say most companies that I experienced where you feel like, oh, there's this never-ending race, everybody's burned out, and you don't really have much to show for it, that's because you're thinking very narrowly about that value proposition. Once you get to a place where you say, yes, of course, how we're going to do peace of mind tomorrow is going to be different from how we do it today, but it's still that same story of why you as a customer should trust us as a company, because we're really excellent at delivering peace of mind or whatever it is that you compete on.
Man, great point. So listeners and viewers out there, I am guilty of highlighting some of the new technology, some of the new things that come out, when technically that is a rat race. There's always something new. So you're always catching up. But if you're more general and you focus on those as your core values, core principles, it will come up in your social media posts, in your sales calls, in your Zoom calls. And so all of it is extremely important to keep general. Great nugget there, sir. I like that.
Wonderful.
So outside of your book, is there a way that people can get in touch with you easily? I think LinkedIn is probably the best way, but are you easily found on X or Facebook or Instagram? Anything you can recommend?
Yeah. So I'm active on LinkedIn. You found me on LinkedIn, if I remember.
That's right.
If I remember correctly. So that's a very good way to get in touch with me. You can also just Google my email address. That's a good way to get in touch with me. And then I have a podcast myself that with two colleagues here at HBS called After Hours. And what we essentially do is we talk about business, we talk about culture a little bit, whatever happens to be in the news that week. And it's meant to be a conversation among colleagues. It's called After Hours because we literally meet after hours. Oh, did you see the news about Tesla? What do you think? And so then, you know, we end up talking a little bit about Tesla, and we have recommendations for what to read and what to watch if people have a little bit of free time to enjoy life as on top of all the activity that the business requires of them.
I got to check that out. After Hours is the podcast.
After Hours. Yes. Yeah. It's on the TED network of podcasts. So if you go to TED and you Google After Hours, you will find us.
Got to check that out. And you seem to be a major capitalist and you're still teaching at Harvard. And, I love that. I love that you're still showing people the way to entrepreneurship. And I always have this phrase within my company, think like an entrepreneur. And if you can do that, you can run towards the dragons, run towards the fire, runs towards the chaos, and really reap many rewards because of it. So as long as you think like an entrepreneur, you can win in any situation. And it seems like you're teaching that at Harvard, which that's phenomenal, man. So guys, the book is called Better, Simpler Strategy, A Value-Based Guide to Exceptional Performance. Check him out on Amazon. Easy to find. Check him out on LinkedIn. Definitely easy to find there. And Felix Oberholzer G, thank you so much for being here, man. This has been
Thank you for having me, Mike. It was a real pleasure.
Remember, guys, a $1 million book will lead to a $1 million life. Right on.